This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Top of the hour here on Sharp Money. It is Wednesday. I'm Jared Smith in for Patrick Maher today. Dustin Sweetelson along with us as well. Time now to go back out to the Progressive guest line. Joining us is Ted Wynn. He is from The Athletic, NFL film analyst. Follow him on X at FB underscore film analysis. Ted, great to hop on with you here today because we've got a lot of questions about some of these quarterbacks, and I think some of your expertise can help us get to the bottom of the dilemma. So we'll start with Jordan Love, who wants to get paid. I think he probably feels like he deserves to get paid. What does the analysis tell you? Is Jordan Love, is the juice worth the squeeze?
I think so. I mean, it's a short sample size. He really started playing better towards the last 8 weeks of the season, but also we have to remember that the Packers offense was extremely young. I think their top six receivers in terms of receiving yards were all under 24 years old. I think only Bo Melton was 24 years old. So as they got better, as they kind of learned the playbook and knew where they were supposed to go, the offense looked a lot better. And that's when you really saw Jordan Love kind of take off. And when you look at his game, you know, you see the flash, you see the ability to throw off his back foot and make those amazing throws, but you see a lot of stability as well. You know, he's able to navigate the pocket. He's able to avoid pressure, which is a very stable stat. And he's really good in the quick game as well, throws under 2.5 seconds. And I just thought he showed a good mastery over the game, and he's playing for one of the best play callers in the league and LaFleur, and I think he's just going to flourish in that type of offense next season. So I can totally see why he wants to get paid. I mean, he took kind of a bet on himself deal last year, and I think he did well enough to deserve one of those contracts. And you know, in this landscape, you just can't wait for a quarterback to play, you know, 2 or 3 years and then award him. You know, especially in his situation, where he had to wait under Aaron Rodgers. You know, I think this is his time to get paid.
Full disclosure, Ted, I was the last member of the party to buy into what the Packers and Jordan Love did last year. The play calling was like a revelation from Matt LaFleur down the stretch. They went 6 of 8 of their final regular season games. But here's my qualm with this, and it's an issue I'm having with the Texans this year. The whole league knows what they did to make it work a year ago. Why do you believe Matt LaFleur is a play caller, what he did last season figuring this out? Do you see it as being something sustainable for Green Bay?
Yeah, I mean, I always thought Matt LaFleur was a top play caller. I mean, you know, when he first got to Green Bay, Aaron Rodgers was struggling. You know, some people thought he was over the hill, and then all of a sudden he's in LaFleur's offense, and he's an MVP, and the Packers offense has been one of the best in the league. So I think he's always been a very strong play caller, and just watching some of his designs and some of the creative stuff he comes up with, you know, I think he's always been one of the best. So I think that part of the Packers offense is always going to be there. And as far as a young talent, when you just look at that receiving core and, you know, how much guys they have, how many guys that look like they're about to break out, it's a very interesting receiving core. They might legitimately have 2 or 3 guys break out next year. And as far as Jordan Love, like I said, there is some stable, good stats to look at that is encouraging if you're banking on him breaking out next year.
Let's move on to the Jaguars. Every time I look at stats and numbers revolving Trevor Lawrence, I always expect to see top 10, and I usually don't. It's just outside the top 10, just on the fringe of the top 10. He's kind of flirting with being that top-tier quarterback, but here's the problem, Ted. He was drafted first overall. The expectations are sky high. He's got all the weapons in the world. He's got even more weapons this year. I know there's been some changes, but he's got a ton to work with down there in Jacksonville. What needs to happen with Trevor Lawrence in order to take that next step? So we're not talking about him knocking on the door of the top 10. He is a top 10, top 5 type of quarterback.
Yeah, I think with Trevor Lawrence, you know, when you look at the team around him, obviously in that first year he had to deal with Urban Meyer, and we know that was one of the worst situations for a quarterback to be in. And the second year with Doug Peterson, things got better. And in that third year, you know, the offensive line dealt with a lot of injuries. Calvin Ridley wasn't quite the guy who they thought they were going to be. They switched play callers to Press Taylor, And when you look at some of the stats, you know, that Jaguars offense with all the injuries they had was one of the worst in the league. But saying all that, you know, like you still need Trevor Lawrence to break out and you still need to see him kind of live up to that contract he's gotten. And he just hasn't so far. And we can make all the excuses we want for him. We still have to see it on the field because, you know, he might have to deal with a lot of adversity with the Jaguars, but he has to find a way, you know, to get past it, whether or not that's unfair or not. If you're getting paid that kind of money, you're going to have to produce like a top five type of quarterback soon. And, you know, sometimes you have to be able to surpass your surroundings. And we'll see if Lawrence is able to do that. I think the Jaguars' offense is going to be a lot better next year. I think Brian Thomas Jr. fits what they need a little bit more with a big outside receiver. And the offensive line should be better. But the play calling, I think, is still who is going to be the play caller is still going to be a big question for the Jaguars. Because if Press Taylor is still going to be that guy, he needs to be a much better play caller than he was last year. And if he struggles, does Doug Peterson take over? Because we know he's proven. And Lawrence had his best year when Doug Peterson was play caller.
I agree it all counts. I do have a lot of questions about not the physical ability of Trevor Lawrence, but it's more the mental makeup. Like, where's that killer, right? Where's the ability to put teams away, to go out and stomp on throats? I just don't see that from him. So I agree with you on all accounts there. And Brian Thomas Jr. is an interesting guy. I'd love to get your thought on him because he's 40-1 for Offensive Rookie of the Year. And I don't think enough is being made of just how productive he was at LSU. And I know he had neighbors on the other side. And I know that team was in a lot of shootouts. But you do deep dives on film, Ted. You're the best when it comes to that. When you see what Brian Thomas Jr. can be for Jacksonville, do you project him to make an impact right away rookie year?
I think so. But I don't know if he's going to be rookie year because, you know, for him to be the rookie year, he would have to you know, maybe get like 1,200 yards, yeah, 10 touchdowns. And to me, Brian Thomas Jr. is not a finished product. And, you know, which is pretty incredible because he was extremely productive at LSU. But he's a height, weight, speed freak that's able to get off the line of scrimmage and beat guys deep. And so much of his production was on fade balls last year. But in the NFL, you have to be a little bit more nuanced to have huge production. But I just think the ability to win on those fade ball and go balls is exactly what the Jaguars needed. They tried to slot Calvin Ridley into that role last year, but that's just not who Calvin Ridley is. But Brian Thomas Jr. is that guy that can produce a deep threat. So even if he gets like 800 yards and, you know, five touchdowns, but he's making defenses have to put two safeties back and opening up space for guys underneath in that offense, then he's going to be kind of a better force multiplier than Calvin Ridley was for this offense.
Ted, I think the Niners are a team that obviously need to be considered amongst the elite in the NFL, but I think that gap between the Niners and the rest of the NFC is a little bit smaller than perhaps the market is indicating. I think Philly and Detroit, maybe it's more weakness up front for San Francisco that I'm seeing. What are you seeing with the Niners, most notably on the defensive side, that makes you think they could or could not have another elite unit this year?
Yeah, I mean, with the Niners, you know, they're having to pay all these guys. They have Trent Williams, who's kind of having a contract dispute now, but maybe they end up saving money with an extension with him. We know about the Brandon Ayuk situation. So they're kind of facing consequences of being a team that has a lot of star players. They have to pay these guys. And when you pay the top guys, you lose depth. So they're kind of struggling to fill depth in. Dre Greenlaw is going to miss, you know, at least a few games to start the season. And he's a huge part of their defense as well. And the defensive line isn't the monster that it used to be as far as just being able to go 3-4 deep and just being able to constantly rotate in all these great players. And Chris Kocorek, who is one of the best defensive line coaches in the league, might be able to coach some guys up and you know, get those guys going. But right now, when you look at it on paper, they have a lot of good, solid pieces on the defensive line. And then you have Nick Bosa, who obviously is a blue-chip player. But when you look at the depth chart, that defensive line just isn't what it used to be, especially losing Eric Armstead, who is such a huge part of that defensive line, especially in run defense. He was by far their best run defender. And whenever he missed games, you really saw that run defense take a hit. So, you know, I think they added some pieces in the secondary, no real impact type of players. But I think they're counting on better coaching helping to improve that defense. I don't know if they have the depth to quite play at the elite levels they have played in before, but that offense is so good that if they could at least be a consistent top 10, top 12 type of defense, they should be right back in the championship mix.
Ted, 45 seconds. If they trade Brandon Ayuk, what does that do to this offense? Can they make up that production?
No. I mean, unless they get another X receiver that could win deep and run that type of route tree, which is going to be really hard to do at this point of the offseason, I think it'd be catastrophic to lose Brandon Ayuk because they don't have anybody else on the roster that does what he does. And it's hard to find a player at his level. Obviously, those guys are getting paid top of the market type of money, and that's what he's looking for.
Ted Wynn, Athletic, NFL writer, film analyst. Of course, follow him on social media at FB_film analysis. Great work as always, Ted. We appreciate the time.
No problem. Thanks for having me on.
Catastrophic. If they lose Brandon Ayuk,
I knew he would have an immediate reaction.
Who am I to disagree? Again, he's much deeper into the analytics and the stuff than me. But again, there wasn't anything positive I heard about the Niners in that handicap you just gave.
I tried to downplay Ayuk and what he is and thought Kyle Shanahan could be the mad scientist to make up for
Maybe
it.
Maybe we're
Ted,
wrong.
Ted, who watches more tape than 100%. Anyone out there, that is a big time
catastrophic. I'll tell you what's not catastrophic is my baseball picks today. Hopefully we turn it around. We'll do a little college football on the other side. Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Hey, the VSIN betting guide out now for the NFL. And college football is right around the corner. Drops August 1st. VSIN Pro subscribers get all the tools to prep for college and NFL. Our experts provide profiles of every team. We've got advanced stats, trends, power ratings, plus best bets on futures and season win totals. Sign up before the end of July. Receive both guides and full VSIN Pro access to our daily pro picks, 24/7 video, and exclusive data like our betting splits all the way through the Super Bowl for an early bird discount price of just $175. The football special discount price ends on July 31st. Visit VSIN.com now to sign up today. All right, we are back here on Sharp Money. Still got a lot of meat left on the bone with this show. Coming up in 15 minutes, Matt Sims, a little quarterback chat. Top of this hour, Scott Grayson from Philly is going to hop on. Actually, 97.3 ESPN. Fun fact, my first internship out of college, 97.3 ESPN in Atlantic City. So,
really?
Fun fact. Obviously, I didn't work with Scott. This was 16 years ago in 2008. We're in
2024. AC, so that's where this all started. That's where the degeneracy began for Jared Smith.
I used to leave the Borgata at 5 in the morning after playing poker all night. Yeah, that's where it started. Actually, to be fair, it started in high school. Chris Moneymaker is really the reason why. That's when we started playing poker in my basement in high school at age 16 in 2002. That's where my gambling started. I made my first bet on baseball that year, too, and in the year of our Lord, 2002. Who won the World Series in 02? I forget.
2002.
White Sox? Was that a White Sox year?
No, they were 05. 03 was the Marlins.
03 was Marlins.
02 was the Angels. That's 01 right. was the D-backs. 2000 was the Yankees.
You know, I remember that Yankees Marlins year, 2003. Obviously, I was a big Yankees fan. I remember emptying my account on the Yankees in that World Series. It was over for me. I remember I bet so much against Josh Beckett. I was like, no way Josh Beckett shoves against us. Josh Beckett who? Josh Beckett
it's,
this?
It's one of my favorite teams of all time. Juan Pierre and Castillo up top.
Team.
The rotation, Brad
Cliff
Penny.
Floyd.
Yeah, Brad. No, Cliff Floyd wasn't there anymore.
He was gone?
Yeah, I think he was gone.
He was on the first team and made it to the World Series. That won the World Series in the first time.
I think I get that starting lineup off the top of the dome.
That's impressive.
Pudge Rodriguez, Derek Lee, Luis Castillo, Alex.
Luis Castillo.
Was Alex Gonzalez there at short?
Not the Luis Castillo we need tonight.
Mike Lowell at third. Juan Pierre in center. Miguel Cabrera played right field in the playoffs. He was 20 years old. Who was the left? Juan Encarnacion?
It
was Cabrera played left, Juan Encarnacion.
Wow, that is really impressive.
It's one of my favorite teams of all time.
I think I can do that with the 98 Yankees, but I'm not, honestly, don't hold me to it because I probably won't be able to get some of the lower guys.
Well, you said that was impressive. I just named names. We don't know if I got them right. Let me look.
Well, you knew them so well. I'm just assuming you got them right.
I got them right. Alex Gonzalez was the shortstop.
Really impressive.
Encarnacion to right in the playoffs. Miguel Cabrera played left field.
So I digress because, you know, that was my first job at Atlantic City and my first
real dive into sports betting came earlier on in my life, but my first dive into legalized casino gambling was that year in Atlantic City. That summer, really. I graduated college in May of 2008. I moved to Atlantic City basically the next week, and that entire summer was just a blur for me.
That's a surprise. Can I hit you with another surprise?
Sure.
There is a press conference that has gone down in the last hour and a half or so. We have sound that we're going to play for you here, where a line in the betting market moved immediately following this press conference. So the new head coach of the UCLA Bruins, after Chip Kelly decided I'm done being a head coach and running this program, ends up at Ohio State. UCLA then promotes coordinator DeShaun Foster. And DeShaun Foster is now leading UCLA as they transition into the Big Ten. That's right. The team in Southern California, in Los Angeles, is in the Big Ten. And DeShaun Foster touched on that and many things when he opened his press conference with the media at Big Ten Media Days like this.
I'm happy to be here. Glad to be a part of this great conference. Finally putting two great emblems together, UCLA and the Big Ten. We're a school that's won, 123 championships. So this fits us being right in this conference. Football-wise, we're just excited. You know, I'm sure you guys don't know too much about UCLA, but our football program, but we're in LA. It's us and USC. I'm just basically excited, really. That's it. Any questions?
Look, that's DeShaun Foster, the new head coach of UCLA. It's very clear. He believed he had the ability to grip it and rip it. He could go up there and wing it, and he'd figure it out as it came to him. My favorite part was we're in Los Angeles.
Los Angeles.
There's us in USC.
No, he didn't even say Los Angeles. He said we're UCLA. We're in LA.
Yeah.
All right,
UCLA.
I don't want to laugh. It is funny. It's awkward. I bet if you asked DeShaun this, he would say it was awkward and weird. The first indicator that he was nervous. So here's another fun fact. You're getting a lot of layers about me. I have a very strong interest in psychology. I studied it not only during college, but after college too. Social psychology always intrigued me, why people act the way that they do, the way their brains work, and how it, you know, kind of translates to their body. Also, being at a poker table is kind of a crash course in social psychology. Hands in pockets right away. Hands in pockets right away coming out. You knew he was nervous. He was nervous. And I get it. You're in a room full of people. You don't know them. They're basically hostile because they're going to ask you questions that you probably don't know the answer to. So that makes you nervous right out of the gate because you don't know what's coming. And you didn't fully prepare a statement. You've never been a head coach before. You've never done that before. It's weird. It's different. I don't want to laugh at a guy's social anxieties in that situation because that's not fair. He needed to prepare better for that situation or send someone else out. Like, it's okay for you to punt on stuff. Like, just because you're the head coach doesn't mean you always have to talk. You could say, hey, listen, I'm busy today. I'm going to go do this. Until you're more prepared. If you're not prepared, go send someone else out.
The issue is he also has a team. Like, he has a sports information director who's essentially a PR person who could have gotten him ready with something as a backup plan. Here, look, if all else fails, here's a little note, a bullet point you got to bring up here and move along with things. Obviously, answering questions is a lot easier than having an opening statement. It's kind of like hosting this show. It's a lot easier to be in my shoes right now where you team me up and you throw things my way than be in your shoes where you have to navigate a lot of things. He went out there and thought that he could just go out there and entertain and say something, and it's a lot harder than he thinks. The reason why in our world this matters, I saw from Brad Powers, he tweeted this out. Right after this statement, UCLA versus Hawaii week one, the line moved.
See, that's dumb.
From 13 to 12 and a half.
That's dumb. Because what is a press conference where you're a young head coach who's never been in a room full of crap? Why does that translate to how you're going to play on the field?
Because that is emblematic of you as a human and your leadership.
That's absurd.
No, absolutely. No, I buy into this.
It's not a key number, so it doesn't matter. It was probably one smart guy betting it. But it just, let's leave it at this. Personally, I wouldn't view a team any differently based off of that. Here's what I would view differently. when Adam Gase is staring off into space and it looks like he's on drugs. That was different. This is, just watch it. He was nervous.
No.
He was public speaking. You go do a public, and thank you for saying that this job is hard. For those of you that say this job is easy, I know there's a lot of you at home that think you could just get off your couch, come sit in this chair, and make it look as natural as we do every day. Trust me, it ain't easy to do what we do. It's not easy to carry conversations and make it seem natural. Deshaun learned that lesson the hard way today. I'm willing to bet he's more prepared next time, but I am not docking a team
The
point spread based off of that interview.
I'm not – look, the point spread's one thing. It's more about if you have waited your whole life for this opportunity to be the head coach at UCLA. We all think about the X's and O's. We think about the game planning. We think about recruiting and NIL now. There's a lot that goes into it. You know what another element is? You're the face of the program, and people look to you to be a leader. And part of leadership is taking everything as serious as you do the recruiting, as you do the NIL. It's the reason why Nick Saban goes up to a press conference, and he always gives you something. There's a soundbite. He doesn't divulge info that hurts his team.
Go back and watch Nick's first press conference and tell me if he was like that. That's my point.
No. The reason why I know Nick Saban was better in his first press conference is because that guy is prepared in every aspect of his life. All of his ducks are in a row. All I'm saying is if that's the guy I chose to lead my football program, I have concerns. Not that he's a bad public speaker. It's that he went up there and didn't prepare properly for the situation.
I agree, but he's not preparing for a football game. He's preparing for an interview.
If you're the leader of UCLA, preparing for that press conference.
I bet
is
he
the
did
same.
Prepare. I just think he panicked. I think he has. You again, when you walk out and your hands are in your pockets, that is the first cue that you are not comfortable with your. That is a subconscious cue that you are not comfortable with your surroundings. And from that point on, it was just a downhill. He lost his train of thought. And then by the time he looked to the side, he was probably looking for help. And he probably forgot every single piece of prep that they did. And it's that has nothing to do with your acumen as a football coach. I am not docking you for that. Now, does that mean UCLA is going to be great this year? No, I don't think they're going to have a good year. But it has nothing to do with that interview. That was just, I feel for you, Deshaun. I've been there before, but I've overcome that fear by watching myself speak on television for the last 16 years of my career. Eventually you just get numb to that awkwardness of practicing. I think his next interview will be much, much better. And if it's not, then maybe you're right. You're onto something. All right, we'll come back on the other side. We'll talk a little more football here on Chart Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Hey, check out VSiN.com right now. We've got lots of baseball picks up for today. Josh Applebaum's got his splits. Steve Mackinnon's got his trends. We've also got Olympic soccer. I'm watching men's football take place right now. Team USA and Team France. But Nigel Seeley's got picks and predictions for the Olympic soccer tournament in Paris. Jared Smith back on Sharp Money in for Patrick Maher today. Dustin Sweetelson with us as well. Let's go back out to the Progressive guest line. Very excited to talk to this next gentleman. Matt Sims of the Believe Network. He's a host over there, also quarterback trainer. Follow him on X at Sims Complete QB, the new podcast, Sims Complete QB, with him and his dad, Phil Sims. You might recognize that name for sure. Matt played 7 seasons in the NFL, very illustrious career also in college. And Matt, we're going to talk quarterback. Surprise, surprise, right? I think we were talking a little bit earlier with Ted Wynn. We were going over the Jordan Love stuff involved in what should be a very intriguing contract situation. I think Jordan Love deserves to get paid. He obviously feels that way. The Packers trying to pay him. Do you think he stands in the top of that quarterback tier as we head into this season?
I mean, he's definitely, you know, on his way to being one of those quarterbacks. I mean, and what we saw in the progression that he made a season ago really was impressive. And the growth that he had at the position, the ability to throw the football accurately and powerfully down the football field with tremendous ease, his great athleticism in and out of the pocket. And it seemed like him and Matt LaFleur really developed a great rapport with each other. And yeah, maybe honestly, it will be something that people will be shocked by the number, but maybe long term, better for the Packers to get him now before he has another great follow-up
sophomore season as a starter, and then the price goes up, of course.
Ooh.
So in a similar vein, I think there's some parallels to draw between what we saw Jordan Love and the Packers, the way they picked up steam, the way Houston hit the ground running with C.J. Stroud. Matt, you played in the league for a while. You're in a lot of rooms game planning. How difficult is it for these teams to put on tape so much success on the offensive side of the ball and then follow that up when there's an offseason of DCs just nitpicking and finding ways to take you out of your comfort zone? How hard is it for teams like those two to repeat it another year?
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess the one thing really is for an advantage for both of the offenses that you just mentioned, right, the Houston Texans and for the Green Bay Packers, is that Matt LaFleur really does have, like, full control of the offense now. And we've really never been able to see exactly what a Matt LaFleur offense looks like separated from Aaron Rodgers. And I feel like late in that year, they really started to kind of find their own voice and like what worked well for him as a play caller, the creativity that he brought to his play calling abilities, I thought was way more, it had way more to it and was more of a deeper in-depth offense than what we saw towards the end there with Aaron Rodgers. So that's exciting. So it'll be curious to see if he can continue to build on that or, you know, do we already see all the tools that he already has at his disposal? And the same thing for Bobby Slowick. I mean, first-time play caller, did extremely well with the rookie quarterback, made it work, did a lot of great things to help the rookie quarterback succeed. And not only that, the rookie was actually that impressive as well. So it really is a tall task for both of these gentlemen to continue to build, you know, that Rolodex of plays as much as they possibly can going into their second year of being the signal callers.
Matt, in 19 of the last 21 years, a team has gone from worst to first in their division. So odds are it's going to happen again this year. Maybe, probably not, but maybe Dave Canales is going to have a very positive impact on Bryce Young and the Carolina Panthers, one of those teams trying to go from worst to first. What is your take from Canales, and what kind of impact do you think he'll have on Bryce Young year one? Because, man, last year was really rough for the number one overall pick.
Yeah, I mean, if there's a guy that has expertise in helping people kind of find their identity again at the quarterback position, it would be Canales, considering what he's done when he was offensive coordinator there in Seattle with Geno Smith and kind of revitalizing his career. And then obviously building off what Sean McVay started with, gaining the confidence back in Baker Mayfield and his ability to be a great leader and also a dynamic football player. So I think Canales, with the experience of being in that quarterback room, understands the psychology of the position, will be able to push Bryce, in a positive way. And then also just, I think, develop an offense that really does fit him extremely well. And there's even comments, too, that I heard Bryce saying that a year ago there was too many cooks in the kitchen. And I think Canales, being a young coach and being energetic that way, I think, you know, they'll be able to kind of meet in the middle and make sure that, you know, Canales is the only one that really is directing that ship and making sure that Bryce feels comfortable with the plays that they're putting in for him.
Matt Sims is with us, Believe Network podcast. Sims Complete QB is the pod, also SiriusXM NFL Radio. He trains quarterbacks. You see him all over the place. Matt, continuity is so important in the NFL. And maybe outside of Michael Penix, the most shocking offseason news we had was that Ben Johnson was going to stay in the Motor City with Detroit. There's a trendy pick among sports bettors for Jared Goff to be the NL MVP. It was 40-1. It's now 22-1. I kind of fall in line with that thinking. When you see what the concepts that Ben Johnson uses Jared Goff in, do you think there's a realistic chance he takes another step this year and could be a legit MVP candidate here?
Yeah, hell yeah, I do. You know, and this goes off of the things that we just discussed with the other gentlemen at the other teams, right, is that, you know, Ben Johnson now has been doing it for multiple years in a row. So, to think that that's going to slow up anytime soon, I don't believe so. It is crazy to think that he turned down a few really big-time jobs. But, you know, the dude is super talented at developing an offense, making sure that you're utilizing all the weapons that they have at their disposal. And then also, too, just getting easy completions for Jared Goff consistently so then he can build up that momentum and make those great plays for them late in game. So I think they're definitely a Super Bowl contender. I think Jared Goff and that offense will definitely be in consideration as one of the more high-powered offense. And, of course, with that, you know, comes with the ability of him potentially being the MVP of the league.
Yeah, I'm one of those guys. I've got a 30-1 ticket on Goff, and I remember watching Matt that Ben Johnson interview when he came back to Detroit, and he told the media, it was a couple of months ago, why he made the decision not to go. And it was one of the most emotionally mature decisions I've ever seen a guy make, because usually someone in his position, you don't know when you're going to get another chance to be a head coach. You take that offer, right, and you go for that money and you go challenge yourself. But he was very secure. It was, again, high emotional intelligence with Ben Johnson. Obviously, the football intelligence off the charts, but you combine those two things together, that's a winning combination for the Detroit Lions and Jared Goff. We don't know if the new rookies coming into the league are going to have winning combinations. Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, those are the high-profile guys. We expect both of them to be starters day one. Which situation do you prefer? Probably Chicago, but Jaden Daniels also has got a little giddy up there with an interesting head offensive coordinator in Cliff Kingsbury.
Yeah, I mean, I would give a slight advantage, obviously, to Cliff Kingsbury and Jaden Daniels, just because of Jaden's skill set, too, his ability to be elusive as a runner and a thrower, that combination. Not to say that Caleb Williams is capable of being, you know, a dual threat quarterback, but I mean, Jaden Daniels does ridiculous things with the football when he is running around. And, you know, I think that they will have a little bit more room for error with that style of offense that they'll play with Cliff. I think Cliff, too, just, you know, being the caller again after it obviously not going as well in Arizona, I think he'll have a little added chip on his shoulder, a little motivation to make sure that he's a little bit sharper and doing a few more things at a deeper level to make sure that his rookie quarterback is playing fast and playing smart and making plays both with his arm and his leg. So slight advantage to Jaden Daniels in that one, I think.
Yeah, Matt, Jared and I have annoyed the audience over the last 3 days with how much we love the Philadelphia Eagles. And I need you to help us understand, because you know how concepts work. You know how what it takes to coach up a quarterback and put him in the best position. When you look at the Eagles now, Kellen Moore in at OC, Barkley in the backfield. Have we ever seen RPO weapons like this before? Hurts, Barkley, A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith, Dallas Goedert. What do you think the Eagles offense could be this year?
I mean, the Eagles offense was impressive as far as the skill group a year ago. And, you know, we're even forgetting, too, just how talented that offensive line is to go with it. You know, the toughness, the physicality, the leadership that Jalen Hurts brings. You know, the big question mark really that I have is just, you know, does Kellen Moore and his style of offense really match Jalen Hurts and what the Eagles, you know, ultimately are built to do? You know, Kellen Moore in his history has been a very pass-happy type of play caller. And I just don't think that the Eagles are best suited to being a, you know, predominantly passing football team. I think, you know, 2 years ago when they were, you know, obviously a Super Bowl run with two eventual head coaches as their offensive defensive coordinator, you know, the best thing that they really did was they just dominated the trenches. They ran the ball extremely well. They made sure that the passing game was had multiple options, but wasn't super complicated, so Jalen could really do his thing. And I'm curious to see if Kellen now will be able to kind of tap into some of those things that they did 2 years ago, or will we kind of see the same Kellen Moore? Because, you know, the one thing that I have an issue with is that everywhere that Kellen Moore has been, his quarterbacks get hit a lot. His quarterbacks don't have answers for a lot of pressure looks. And this is something that, you know, popped up with the Eagles last year late in the year, where Jalen Hurts seemed to be getting hit on almost every play. They just had no answers for any of the blitz pickups that they were going through. So That'll be the big thing going this season.
Great analysis. Matt Sims, Believe Network podcast host. The podcast is called Sims Complete QB. Follow him on X at Sims Complete QB. Thanks for the time, Matt.
No, thank you so much, gentlemen. I appreciate it.
More Sharp Money next.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Hey, July's ending with a bang. UFC has not one but two titles on the line. UFC 304 to be exact. You can get your own crown. Jump in on all the action with DraftKings Sportsbook, the official sports betting partner of the UFC. Download the app now. Use the code VSIN. That's code VSIN for our new customers. Get 150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Only on DraftKings. The crown is yours. Back on Sharp Money, Jared Smith, Dustin Sweetelson, Wednesday afternoon, coming up at the top of the hour. Scott Grayson from my old stomping grounds down there in Atlantic City. Very excited to talk to this gentleman. He is a reporter with ESPN 97.3 down there in the Philadelphia, South Jersey area. And we'll get his thoughts on all things Eagles as we continue to wax poetic about Philly this season. Although I'll be honest, Matt Sims' scathing handicap there of the pressure schemes and Kellen Moore's overall schematics, maybe that's the chink in the armor right there.
No, it was an interesting point brought up there that the same thing he likes his quarterbacks to do is something that kind of plagued them a year ago. I think Jalen Hurts is a really interesting quarterback. I do think you can win long-term with him in the NFL. The Eagles are winning a lot of games with him under center. But there's a misnomer when people look at football that really, I mean, it bugs me, Jared. Like, there's a difference between having a high completion rate and being an accurate quarterback. Jalen Hurts is not an accurate quarterback. He does not throw guys open. He's not dropping it on a diamond stride. However, he is mobile. He is a guy that's tough to take down. He's able to make plays with his legs, extend to throw or run, either one. And because of that, I do think you can scheme him up and be successful. The thing is with Kellen Moore, I don't know how he meshes with his system. The big thing for Kellen Moore, it's not even about X's and O's. The reason why I am high on this team, though, is because the number one need the Philadelphia Eagles had was the lack of maturity. They were an immature team a year ago, starting at the top with Sirianni. And I just think Kellen Moore and Vic Fangio being lifers the way they've been as coordinators, Fangio with a stint as a head coach, I think that elevates the maturity of that locker room. That's where I think the biggest impact is made.
It's a good point. So the one note I saw that was intriguing to me with Kellen Moore was his pace. The Chargers ran at one of the fastest paces of any team, situation neutral, under Kellen Moore's regime there with the offense. I am curious how that translates to Philly, because Philly's always been a very slow, plodding, methodical team. They run the ball. It's very much 5 yards in a cloud of dust, you know, the tush push, all that stuff. Do those principles change? Does Kellen Moore adapt Philly, or does Philly adapt Kellen Moore? Like, well, what came first, chicken or the egg here?
Sure. What I'd say is he had success with Ezekiel Elliott using him the way he did in Dallas, and he had Austin Eckler for a little bit there with the Chargers, right? Think about what Saquon Barkley is as a pass catcher compared to those two. You got a Ferrari. You got a toy to play with. Let's do something with it. Utilize what he brings to the table, a size-speed combination, ability to catch the ball in the backfield. Like, I think Kellen Moore is also in a position where he has really interesting weapons to play with here. That's what intrigues me the most. I want to run this by you, though, Jared.
What do you got?
Because there's a bet, a prop, on the Denver Broncos on the quarterback to play first week one and take the first snap for the team under center.
Okay.
Bo Nix is minus $4. Zach Wilson plus $450. Jared Stidham is plus $650. And talking about the quarterback battle going on with a rookie coming in Bo Nix, who they took there, Denver, in the draft this year, Sean Payton had this to say about he's divvying up the reps between those three.
We'll mix it up again. Obviously, it won't stay that way for the long term. But as we get started, we'll keep you posted. And eventually, we'll settle into the routine we want. I'm not going to sit here and lay out, like, here's how it goes, because I think the mistake made is deciding how it goes. Organically, this my experience, I think we'll see a rotation initially, and then we'll move on from there.
Comments from Sean Payton being very secretive how he's going to do it, also saying that they're going to be organic in how they divvy up these reps and letting it play out in front of them, which leads me to believe it truly is a wide open race here.
Probably is.
And I'm going to make a really weird case for a really weird bet on a really weird quarterback. All around, this is going to be an odd statement. And I'm going to talk out of both sides of my mouth, where I also think there could be value on Bo Nix, rookie of the year, at 16-1. However, when I look at who's going to take the Broncos' first snap at quarterback week one of this year, you absolutely can't lay $4 with Bo Nix. I don't think plus 450 on Zach Wilson makes sense. There's a reason Jared Stidham is there in Denver. There is a reason Jared Stidham is a coveted backup in the league. He was a highly touted prospect, obviously, in college. Auburn, right, at one point, Baylor. And he's a guy that coaches seem to revere for his ability and the potential there. I don't think anyone views him as a starter in this league long term. However, in this situation where Bo Nix, I'm not really sure he's ready. And Sean Payton's going to know, because he's a quarterback guru, if he's really ready. And I don't think Zach Wilson's really had enough time to get ready. No. Him and Nix are on the same timeline. I think there is an outside chance at plus 650 Jared Stidham does take the first snap for the Broncos this year. It's not sexy. It's not appealing. But remember, Sean Payton got a 10-year deal. Sean Payton's been able to have a long-term plan for Denver, unlike most head coaches we've seen in the NFL. Therefore, he can take his time, and if he decides Bo Nix is his franchise quarterback, he will be able to bring him along the way he wants to.
10-year deal is crazy. I like the bet. I think the way that these quarterback markets move, there's a decent chance that sometime in the next 2 to 3 weeks – you hear very negative stories coming out about Bo Nix and Zach Wilson, or positive stories coming out about Jared Stidham. And because this market is moving basically off, you know, the Matthew McConaughey scene in Wolf of Wall Street, boom, 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 doesn't exist. It's fairy dust. Like, we're moving markets off a quarterback starting in week one. Like what basis of power ratings are we using to set those numbers? They will move fast and furious the moment's notice we get news in any direction. It could go the other way. Sure. Where you hear Bo Nix looks great, blah, blah, blah. He's the guy. Like, it could, and then boom, that market gets exploded in either direction. But my point being, if it is going to be that volatile of a market where it's like basically a house of cards and one windstorm is going to blow it in either direction, I think you take the plus money, you take the long shot, and you hope the first blow is in your direction.
Yeah.
And then you can come,
adjust.
And then you can make your adjustment, new information, new opinion, and you come back on the other side and you make your hay. But there's nothing to gain from laying what?
$4.
$4 with Bo Nix. Like, best case scenario, you win that bet, you got to wait another 6 weeks. Worst case scenario with Jared Stidham, you got a plus 650 lemon in your back pocket, no big deal. To me, that's like asymmetric risk with that situation.
Yeah, and look, we look in the same market. It's a little bit different for the Las Vegas Raiders. Right now, Aiden O'Connell is the favorite at minus 120. Gardner Minshew, even money to take the first snap at quarterback for the Raiders this season. And the reason I bring this up is Antonio Pierce met with the media yesterday, and he had a couple quotes. He said, one, they're not going to rush on quarterback one. Quote, when it's clear and it's evident, then we need to make that decision to move forward. Experience is not going to play a role in this. Best player to help the Raiders win games is all that matters to him. And then finally, the decision will be made by Pierce, Luke Getsy, their new OC, and Tom Telesco, the GM. Combined effort. Everyone's going to be involved here. But look, what is their goal as a team this year? For Antonio Pierce, he has to prove he can be more than the guy who was the opposite of Josh McDaniels. Yep. A lot of the reason why it worked was he said, well, I'm just going to be totally different than the guy everyone hated. Well, now he's had an offseason to adjust. He has to implement his system, and he has to go there and create as a head coach.
Yep.
Gardner Minshew is the guy who gives you the opportunity to win more football games right away. I know Aiden O'Connell.
I agree with. I don't think anyone disagrees with that.
Yeah, Aiden O'Connell had some moments. I get they think they want to develop him. They want to be a team that has a young guy with upside. But Gardner Minshew at even money, that feels like it has to be the play, because the pressure's on for Pierce to prove it wasn't a fluke down the stretch a year ago.
Yeah, I think if you want to ask me my opinion on the Raiders, is there's going to be a lot of upheaval. I think Davante Adams is gone by the end of the year. I think you start to see, just the foundations of this team really change, right? You bring in Jimmy G, you have Derek Carr, you ship him out of town. The offense, you sign a polished wide receiver, which is basically the last thing you do after you feel like you've already built the foundation. They built it the wrong way. It looks like I think they're building it the right way. I do think Antonio Pierce does have some room to grow as a head coach, but I think he did a really good job last year under dire circumstances, and you're now starting to build the defense, right? You bring in, what was it, Phillips or Wilkins? I forget which one from Miami.
Wilkins.
Wilkins. And then you obviously have Max Crosby, who might be pound for pound the best defensive player in the league now that Aaron Donald's out. So I think there's a lot of positives with Vegas, but I think it's a slow burn. And I think the offense is going to take a long time to adjust. And to me, the first piece that gets moved is Davante. Like, the first, if there is a big name that gets moved this year, it's the Raiders starting 2-6 and Davante Adams getting traded at the deadline.
Well, I tried to watch the receiver show. You could see the frustration he had a year ago. Yeah. There's no way things were just fixed, because The offense wasn't fixed.
No. The defense is going to be good. They're going to have to win a lot 13-10 games this year, and I just don't know if the offense...
Not in 2024.
Is scheduled to have that kind of a situation. Scott Grayson, Philly Sports. Can the Eagles win the Super Bowl? We'll ask him next. Sharp Money.